The Nature Stories podcast, where people and place intersect.
Support for this public radio podcast comes from Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals. 1-888-VANGUARD.
You're listening to the Nature Stories podcast, curated by Atlantic Public Media in collaboration with the Nature Conservancy and the Public Radio Exchange. I'm Samantha Brown. Up now, another piece from Stories from the Heart of the Land, the public radio series about the connection between people and the natural world. This piece is from the series' fourth hour, Nature's Home Ground, which considers what it means to be grounded in a place, to live sometimes harmoniously and sometimes not, connected to the natural world. Here's series host Jay Allison.
We begin with a man who many people talk about the same way he talks about nature, in hushed, reverent tones. But the revered nature writer, Barry Lopez, shuns fame, retreating to his somewhat monastic existence in Oregon, a place where few journalists have been invited to visit him. But that's where producer Sandy Tolan will take us now, to the home ground of Barry Lopez.
You can see with the light streaming through the trees above us that the mist here is like a snowstorm. There is so much water in the air, you can see it over there like smoke moving across the shafts of sunlight.
Barry Lopez is standing here in a cloud of moisture at the foot of Sahali Falls. That's in central Oregon along the Mackenzie River. His face is lit up.
Look here, observing the whole thing in utter calm, is a water ouzel, a bird sometimes called a dipper. It's right there at the edge of the rock. That's a bird that can actually plunge into the water and, in some sense of the word, fly underwater in the river and then surface again.
Barry comes here a lot. He lives a few miles away. From here, an hour east of Eugene, he's traveled to the high Arctic and the South Pole. He's trekked the deserts of northern Kenya, crossed Inuit lands in the far north. He's been among the Ainu in northern Japan, with the Walpiri people in Aboriginal Australia. In all these places, he says, he listens to the traditional storytellers and what they say about our sped-up, globalized world.
One of the things that we've been trained to do in our modern lives is to disengage with landscape. You know, we've been standing here talking for a few minutes and 20 people have drifted by. But if they had stayed, they would have seen this raven that just circled behind my head. And they would have begun to wonder, you know, why are there western red cedars growing here? And isn't this really quite a remarkable show of blossoms on these thimbleberries? You can make that effort to incorporate yourself into the scene. Just see it as part of the expression of the world in which you too are living.
Barry's home ground surrounds a wooden house amid stands of Douglas fir off the Mackenzie River Highway.
The house is like a monastery, you know. Once every couple of months I'll put a piece of music on. The life in the woods is right on the other side of the piece of glass, so I've heard bears huffing at night walking past the house here, and I can hear when I'm sleeping at night, or if I wake up and I have the windows open, I can hear the little ticks of toenails against dry branches on the forest floor.
So this is the room that I work in.
We're standing upstairs in his study overlooking the river, and one by one, Barry shows me the things he's gathered.
Early on, I did pick up things which were, as a young man, a reminder for me about how to behave, how to think.
A rib bone from a caribou, a bald-faced hornet's nest, a piece of antler from an African springbok.
Springbok?
Springbok. It's S-P-R-I-N-G-B-O-K, so a small antelope that has this vertical leap that makes it...
A ship's nail, hairs from a tail.
I was traveling in Namibia and was right behind some lions that were hunting a kind of gazelle called an oryx. And the oryx got away, and I picked up those hairs from the oryx's tail to remind me that life is dangerous and you have to pay attention. I used to pick up a lot of things when I was traveling, and now I don't pick up anything much anymore. My tendency is to leave everything where I found it.
And to remember every item and where it goes. When you visit Barry, it feels like you're in a curated exhibition, a museum with a man living inside it.
There's nothing in the house that I haven't personally addressed and made a decision about its being there. It's like an edited manuscript.
So that scallop shell from the China Sea, it's just where Barry wants it. That handwritten Japanese manuscript lying open on the coffee table, it's open to that particular page for a reason. You don't just set your computer down casually on the unscratched black walnut dining room table. You just would not want to do that.
This photograph was sent to me by an anonymous reader. You know, it's an oddly cropped photograph of somebody in Central Asia, but you see the hands and the beautiful design and the clothes, and you see the mud on the horse and the ground and the mud on the boots. And it's astonishing to me the number of people who send you things. So this photographer does his work, I do what I do, and it's just like he's on another ridge and he raises his hand and waves to me and says, me too, still working. How's it going over there? I use two fingers, sometimes four, but I never learned to type. But I can limp along pretty good. Some people have an ability to write away from home or write anywhere, hotel room or something like that. I don't. I would say probably in the past 35 years, maybe two or three pieces I have drafted while I've been away from this room. IBM Selectric 3, I have three of them. So I know at some point we're just going to run out of parts. But until we do, I just don't see the advantage for me to go to a word processor or technology like that. You know, people say, well, you can move paragraphs around. You don't have to retype anything. Well, I don't move paragraphs. By the time I'm finished with a piece, it's like finished carpentry.
This is a man living among words. When I stayed here, I slept in the library and woke up one night as moonlight poured in and lit up the spines of thousands of books. In the middle of the night, I sat there and I did the math and figured out that Barry is living among perhaps a billion words.
Probably 90% of what's on these shelves I have read. I can recall the print on the page and a new word that I learned or a concept.
But it's not like this guy is just sitting around all day reading and thinking great thoughts in his monastery. He works the phones.
23rd, yeah, so the
tapping 20, a network 19, of friends and 20th, fellow writers.
21st, 22nd, four nights.
Planning with editors or agents in New York or California.
Right. And then we come from Huihini back to Papeete.
Arranging talks or field work 10,000 miles away.
So I have one big errand to do on Tahiti, and that's to go out, you know, to the point there where Cook was.
In the end, of course, it all gets back to writing down stories. Over four decades, Barry Lopez has compiled volumes. Short stories, collected essays, children's books, liner notes for records, thousands of letters, mostly to readers. He's got a copy of nearly every word. The man has a sense of his own place and time. And now he's begun to pull his papers together, and he's getting some help.
I'm Emma Hardesty. I moved to Oregon specifically to work with Barry and left Tucson, where I had all lived a lifetime, raised my son, grandson are there.
Emma arrived a couple of years ago to help Barry get his things in order, to introduce him to email, which she prints out, then types in the replies as dictated by Barry's two fingers on the Selectric. But these aren't the main reasons why a 56-year-old grandmother would leave friends and family to come to a rainy outpost where she didn't know a soul.
What motivated me? Purely the honor of working with Barry. When I was still in Tucson and talking with him, I had a feeling, without knowing it, that he probably had a book under his belt that he wasn't getting to. And that is the case. So I want him to work on that book because I want to read it.
Emma's right. There is a big book in Barry. It began forming more than 20 years ago after he won the National Book Award for Arctic Dreams. In the time since, the idea has grown so big it takes up entire bookshelves. Kenya, left-hand side of the first shelf. Rock Art, shelf 4. So big is this book, it even has its own room downstairs, where a single lamp pours a pool of light onto an empty desktop.
This room I don't go into because it's a room that's designed to accomplish a single task, and I don't have the courage for it yet. So the working parts of it are sitting there. I do go in to put some notes in and dust every once in a while. But I leave it alone, and I leave that light burning, and I'm trying to get in there.
Barry says it's time to get back to the woods, back to his horizon. That's what his book will be called. There's a lot of sifting to do, a lot of grit to gather up, a lot of mulling and reflecting on hilltops, on his own home ground.
Turkey vulture. Late in the afternoon like this, there's a lot of warm air that's been heated all day long that's rising out of these valleys. So you'll see birds hunting for something like that vulture is. See, it's never flapped its wings, and all the time we're watching it, it's just riding the warm air rising up out of the valley.
Sometimes Barry will sit up here half the day at Horse Creek, gazing out at the Oregon Cascades. Below us, there's a faint rumble of water a mile away.
It's like an unbroken exhalation, a deep breath that is being exhaled for centuries.
As far as we can see, there's no evidence of humans, except the occasional jet stream 7 miles high. It's hard not to feel a sense of something beyond human here, especially when my friend is a man who nearly became a monk 40 years ago. Now he finds his monastery in the land. We watch that vulture for a while. It's so quiet we can hear Horse Creek a mile away.
All right.
Then Barry stirs and we rise, get back into his truck, and roll down the mountain, back toward his house along the Mackenzie River Highway.
That portrait of Barry Lopez was produced by Sandy Tolan with help from Elizabeth Chur. Lopez's most recent book, compiled with Deborah Gwartney, is titled Home Ground.
That piece was produced for Atlantic Public Media's series Stories from the Heart of the Land. The music was composed and performed by Bill Frizzell. The Nature Stories podcast is produced with support from the Nature Conservancy, committed to protecting nature and preserving life. If you'd like more information on the series or the podcast, go to nature.org/stories and join me next week when we travel the vanishing grease trails in northwestern Canada. From Woods Hole, Massachusetts, I'm Samantha Brown.